everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Janet Foster Show, the show where you get real talk you can act on. And, you know, today's Tuesday, like always, and we're here live, and I have a special guest. I have Mr. Jimmy Cabs, who's riding shotgun with me
today. Hello, Janet. Thank you so much for having me here. I'm really interested to hear what the results are today.
Oh, good, good. He's going to be riding shotgun with me, and, you know, this is that one episode every month that you guys always ask about, that I take one episode where I answer your questions, and you know, you've sent me a lot of questions this past week, so I'm going to try to get into that. But also, we're going to talk about what's been dubbed in the media as Mega Tuesday, because today we had five primaries, and I know most of us here on the West Coast, no primaries here on the West Coast. The next wave will start up for us next month, but. Polls have started to close. Polls have already closed in Florida and in Ohio. But right now, I just one quick thing. You can get social with me on Facebook at Janet Foster and on Instagram and Twitter at Janet D. Foster. And that's D for Deborah. And we'll call out your questions, but I want to go ahead and start giving you a little rundown of some of the results. We already have two results in. Our boy Rubio, he's done. He lost Florida. Trump took Florida. Right now, they only have 40% of the precincts in. And Trump has over a million votes. Basically, the rednecks have showed out in Florida. That's all I can tell you. As someone,
it is so incredible. You know, it really is incredible how his campaign not only has done the exact opposite of what the normal politicians follow, but he seems to really, no matter what he does, there's no wrong. And for Rubio, this is a very cold reality check.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
I completely agree. One thing that I know some of my Cuban friends, the ones who are Democrats, they completely agree with me on this. But I got to reiterate a point. You know, Marco Rubio has just learned two things, and we've observed two things. The first thing is the state of Florida is not feeling him. And the second thing he needs to realize, he's been put on notice. He's going to be a one-and-done senator.
No, absolutely. It
completely. And the last senator from Florida to be a done-in-one was Paula Hawkins. People may not even know that Florida actually sent a woman to the Senate, and she was a Republican, Paula Hawkins. And basically the same, you know, the issues with not being around, not being accessible, things like that.
That really sabotaged him on this campaign, correct?
It did. Well, and also, too, there are times where he did it to himself.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, he did it to himself. I don't know who advised him, but whoever advised him to even run, it was the wrong thing to do. He's a Gen Xer, and I'm, you know, this show particularly focuses on Gen Xers and millennials.
Correct.
And, you know, as someone who was in Miami, he's my generation. We were on the grind, the political grind at the same time. He was a staffer, actually for a state legislator. That's how he moved through things. And then he became a city councilman in West Miami. And, you know, he hasn't had the kind of work experience that a lot of Gen Xers have had. You know, Gen Xers, quite a few of us have had either several jobs or several careers. And most of us have had several jobs because our generation was the first to deal with the constant layoffs, particularly if you were in tech, that happened. But he never had a job in the private sector. A lot of people I know, my Miami peeps, I know a lot of you who are Republicans and who may have ties to Marco Rubio or who supported him, you'll argue with me, but he had his own private law firm. But that law firm, he didn't try any cases. He does have a law degree. He is admitted to the Florida bar. But what he did, he basically used some of the hookup system that he had because he termed out of the legislature.
It seems to me that he seems to be a very ambitious young man who is somewhat disconnected. They talk about Trump being disconnected with reality, but it seems to me that he seems to be very, the ambition has maybe blinded him, so to speak.
I think part of it is that blinding ambition. And I also think the other part was that he insulated himself with some people who maybe promised him some things, or he agreed to some things and they thought that they could make this happen. And to my Cuban friends who are not Democrats, if you're independents or Republicans, you need to realize, out of the cocoon of Dade County, you need to realize the state that you live in. And, I lived after college, I lived in Miami, but I became voting age and I went to college in Central Florida. Actually, the town of where I'm from is Lakeland, and the nickname of my high school was called Redneck Tech.
Oh, wow. That says it all right there.
I mean, it's farm, it's rural, and the demographics of the state of Florida has changed. You know, you hear on national news, you hear a lot of upbeat things about the state of Florida, and it's a lot of great things that are going on, but there's still some vestiges of the South shall rise again. That's just that's the most polite way
Would you agree that Trump's victory in Florida is not only a combination of that demographic, but it's also maybe a backlash to Rubio as you mentioned, give him a clear message that, hey, you're on your way out?
I think it is. I agree with you there. Knowing what I know about that area, it's a backlash about for him against Rubio, in the sense of just letting him know you are on notice. Because when we go back to when he won that Senate seat, it was,
Wasn't it?
It was very controversial because it was a three-way race. Mm-hmm. And basically, he was the last man standing. You had the Democrat, and then you had Charlie Crist, who was in the Republican race. He was a Republican, former governor. Mm-hmm. And basically, the Florida Republican Party wanted to basically get back at him for taking money from the Obama administration to help residents, particularly that state was hit hard with the real estate crisis, with basically the crash. And to begin with, the economy in that state depends so much on tourism, as well as it depends a lot on a lot of federal type monies, because the state doesn't fund itself. It doesn't have a state income tax. And so a lot of things, it generates its income either by fees that they charge, or through a lot of pork that's brought back from members of Congress. And the majority of that state is funded by tourist dollars and sales tax. That's why so many millionaires and billionaires run to Florida.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't Florida also still the main state of the whole union where retirees go to as well?
Exactly. Because of that cost of living, that's one piece. And also what's a big trend is there's something called leakage mm-hmm. in the state of Florida. And I'm a prime example. I hold a degree from one of its top, the top four universities in the state. I hold a degree from that, from a public university in Florida, but I don't live there anymore. And one of the main reasons why I don't live there anymore is because I knew I could make more money elsewhere.
Yeah.
And the state's very good in terms of educating, educating individuals and preparing individuals in its state university system for white collar work, as well as the sciences. But people don't stay in the state of Florida. And particularly if you want to be paid well, you don't live there.
Is it a revolving door, that state?
Yeah, I think it is. It's a revolving door for anyone who is homegrown, that they earn their education, they go elsewhere. But then when they leave, you've got retirees coming in, and that's a lot of the mix. But depending on where they're coming from, you have retirees from New York, a lot from New York, New Jersey, and just other parts of the Northeast. They're going to be in the Miamis, the Broward counties of the world, and of course Boca Raton. If they're in Boca Raton, they're pretty wealthy. They've got property in the Hamptons. That's why
This is a very strong message then to Rubio.
Oh, it's a very strong message, because when you
Talk about breaking his confidence. He was very confident. He was really the last couple of days going on a limb of putting on a good face of confidence and being secure. And this pretty much nails it. It's done.
Yeah. But you know what? I saw inklings of it yesterday in his speech that he did at his last stop in West Miami. I could hear it in his voice because he started talking about growing up in West Miami. Oh, my wife and I, when we got married, we bought our house here. When people start talking about that, he knows he's coming home.
It's acts of desperation. And it's also what I would say when you're really cornered, you're trying to appease, you're trying to really connect with the voter.
Yeah.
It just seems to me, as I mentioned before, and I'm going to ask you in a bit the percentages if it's available, but it just seems to me that there's no wrongdoing with Trump. I mean, the controversies with the recent protests at his gatherings, the violence, you know, his own statements that he's made. It just seems that this message that he carries has really touched the American voter who is just frustrated with the whole political game. And I don't want to use vulgar language here, but it just seems to me that people are extremely fed up with the political BS. And regardless of what this man says, that is not in the norm of a politician, that appeals to the mass audience now.
I think it does, and particularly with that Republican base.
Absolutely. It's chaos.
I think your description may describe things very well in places like Massachusetts or other areas, but there's also those underlying factors. It's the elephant in the room in terms of southern states. You've got to go back to there's the resurgence, and that's where you get the David Dukes of the world feeling comfortable to come forward.
Correct.
And other individuals that want to express themselves.
This is your realm here. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Let me ask you this, because this is something from an outsider looking in. It seems to me that, as I mentioned, he's unstoppable. What is going to happen when the silent Latino beast wakes up? Because it seems that there's some sort of preparation going on the West Coast where the get out and vote is going to be, the get out and vote campaign is going to really be pushed towards the Latino vote, the demographic, et cetera. What do you think? You think he'll be that successful out here in California?
I think
the Westerns
in the Western states. I think he will, but it won't be as a result of the Latino vote. I think that's going to play more to the Democratic side, because the entire Latino diaspora has had individuals step forward. I mean, you've got the Eva Longorias of the world who have always been consistently active, not just this year,
correct,
but always. And she's been quiet because you hadn't seen it because she's been busy. And, you know, you've got a lot of people. You got the John Leguizamos of the world. And I mean, you've got people from different parts of the diaspora that they've already been deployed. They're having these conversations and things are being done. I don't think in terms of Trump. One thing that I do want to point out with Florida, and quickly before we keep just a quick segue, also want to let our listeners know that John Kasich has held off Trump in Ohio. So that's a that's a good thing.
But that was predictable, correct?
It was predicted that he would hold on to it, and but nobody really knew.
Yeah, you know,
polls say one thing, and then you know what people say and what people tend to do in the voting booth is another. Now back to the Latino vote, I think definitely in strategic areas where you do have Latinos who do vote Republican, it will be very interesting to see what happens in Arizona.
Absolutely.
In New Mexico. Also in Colorado. And of course, the Latino vote is on the Republican side is very small. But to see how they will deal with the vitriol. Because right now, right now in Florida, pretty much in Central Florida, the Latino vote swings Democratic. And if they don't swing Democratic, those folks may swing Republican, and chances are they didn't vote for either Rubio or Cruz or Trump. They probably either went with Kasich, or I know some people who said they would do their own write-ins. Wow. So, you know, whereas in Miami, in Dade County and parts of Palm Beach County, you know that they were going to go Rubio. But the fact that with 40% of the precincts in, and he only had 605,000, and knowing, and that's just really bad because he represents the most populous part of the state. That, I mean, it's basically South Florida is gravy. And the thing about Florida is that it's a closed primary state, meaning independents can't vote. It's so, which means these are people who are registered as R and D. That's why this takes, I think, a completely different vibrato from other states. Because there are some states that are what's like in Illinois, they're a semi-closed, which means independents can vote. They just have to show up that day and ask for what ballot, what party ballot they want. And it's like here in California, where basically anybody who's registered can vote. Which, you know, as someone who ran communications for the Democratic Party, I have issues with that opening. It's either I was hoping we would do a semi where at least, you know, independents could come in, but they request what side, because you tend to at some point there's going to be some dishonesty going on.
Absolutely.
You know, which California, I was like, what were we thinking about with that? But, you know, with Florida, I'm not surprised. There are some people who are very surprised, but
really?
It's mainly a lot of my friends that are from the Miami-Dade area, mm-hmm. Broward area. But you know, you got to get out of that cocoon of realizing where you live. You know, a lot of them really haven't clocked a lot of living time in Central Florida or in the Panhandle. They may have gone to the University of Florida in Gainesville. Or, you know, Florida State and Tallahassee, which those are very tiny college towns. That basically, those universities are the cities. But outside of that, they've never had to live with the day-to-day. And anybody who lives in Miami, you can pretty much insulate yourself from a lot of the, to be nice about it, I call it the unpleasantries that do exist. And I mean, even me, I'm from Tampa Bay, and you know, Tampa is one of the more sophisticated cities, but some of the nonsense, as I call it, it exists there too. I mean, there's Plant City, and then the fact that, you know, I went to a high school whose nickname was Redneck Tech, you know, it happens.
Incredible.
Obviously, I'm very proud to know a lot of people there. And I tease a lot of my friends, and they tease too, where, you know, they'll call themselves rednecks. But we mainly talk about how they know how to make things out of duct tape or fix funny looking things, but it works. You know, and we do it in jest. But there are some people that have hate in their heart. And with 40% of the precincts in, the haters came strong. I mean, the fact that he had over 1 million votes, that's crazy.
That's incredible.
That is really crazy. I mean, just nuts. What I can do is I'll give you a little feedback on some of the numbers that are so far. In terms of delegate count tonight so far, Trump has 568 delegates. The winner who can get the nomination only needs 1,237. So he's ticking towards it. Cruz is still in second place, and he was really quiet in Florida. And I've got a little 411 about that. And there's a reason for that.
Why is that, Janet?
You know, it could be because, you know, the fact that he is Canadian and has no connection to the Cuban community in Miami, that's interesting,
that hasn't really been made an issue with the media.
Well, because one thing on mainstream media, because language, I think it's a language thing that they don't want to go there. But of course, me being from Miami and also being bilingual, I want to go there because that's the first thing when he came on the scene. And when I found out how old he was, he's a Gen Xer. And I was like, I don't know him. I don't know any of his people. And the fact that I don't know that, that's problematic for him.
Yeah, right? Like, where did you come from?
You know, I've spent an extensive amount of time in Miami, and I know the movers and shakers and those families that are the deal in Miami. I mean, these are families that had great wealth in Cuba, left it, came to Miami and rebuilt, you know, so,
wow.
Yeah, don't know who he is. And I have questions for him, but we'll get into that. What those questions I have for him are, but, Cruz is second. Rubio finished third. He only has, 163rd.
Wow.
And then Kasich, right now he has 129, even with the projection, that boosted him up. But, Kasich, He's going to live to see another day. And I out of everybody who's left now since the three-man race, he's the most sane
I would
option.
Say he's the most stable, and he's,
yeah,
and he's steady.
He's crazy. He's got his own set of crazy. But his crazy, you could deal with it. You know, you can kind of deal with it. And he's just not off the wall. Nobody's getting punched, you know. You know, and the fact that, too, out of everybody who was left, he's the only one that has the most experience.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I told my...
What does this say for the Republican Party, and what is the message that is being portrayed to fellow Americans in regards to all this chaos?
I think what's biting the coming back to bite Republicans is their strategies of the past. I mean, the Karl Roves of the world, where they wanted to bring in and play the race card. That was their strategy. They played the race card. They played the immigration card. And basically, when they played those cards in the political game, they used it as demonizing tools, and they divided up the country and played the game. Yeah. And what's happened is now... They've brought people in under their what I call under their tent, and they're people that Republicans don't want to deal with, never wanted to deal with. They just wanted the numbers. That's all, you know. And now what's happened is these people have multiplied like fleas. That's the best way.
That's
I
a great
can
analogy.
Say it. I mean, and they've just basically overrun because you. There's always this discussion about people who vote against their best interest. The strategy that the Republicans have used in elections past have played to that, bringing people in, making people think. I think it's rather brilliant how they make someone who's barely making $50,000 a year, if they're making that much, how they get them to think to vote no on a transportation project. Oh, it just costs too much money, to get them to think that that's coming out of their $50,000, but they'll fund the stadium. That's brilliant. That is
it is in a way it is. It's just amazing to me to see that on this campaign, the message that is being portrayed is basically, look, we need a change. If you really look at Trump's campaign mm-hmm. in a positive aspect,
what's that?
Which is basically what he's running on is saying there needs to be a change. But you look at the person who's saying that, and there's just a double standard there because he is part of that establishment which has caused this decay with the United States and the middle class mm-hmm. and the economy and, you know, manufacturing.
And he's sucking them right in with that. I think he's doing the ultimate, you know, and a card game analogy. You know, the big joker is always the highest in the deck. He's the big joker in the Republican Party. And you've got, I've got friends. I was at a dinner party Friday night. I have friends who, you know, California Republicans are completely different than the rest of the,
Not as extreme?
Well, at least the people that I know, I'll just put it this way. Most of them are Republicans because they do have trust funds. These are people who live in Newport Coast. You know, people who have real money. And they have real...
Real money.
Yeah, real money. Like, they're not aspirational Republicans. They're the real deal.
I love that analogy. It's so true.
Yeah, they're the 1%. You know, I'm rolling with the 1%. And you know, they have real, you know, real... They're real constituents of the party. Mm-hmm. And... they told me when it's primary time, they'll go ahead. They're going to vote for Hillary.
Interesting.
The reason why is because, you know, Hillary is a centrist. Mm-hmm. And most Democrats are moderate to centrist here in California. You've got the two extremes when it comes. But what's interesting is, though, for most centrists, in terms of economics, there's a willingness to work with the other side of the aisle. And that's what we need. That's what we've been missing.
Absolutely.
On both parties. You've got too many people on the other side, but centrists have disappeared. And that was Bill Clinton. That's why Bill Clinton was my guy in 1988. When I was a college student, I heard him speak in Atlanta because I said, that's it.
He moved you, huh?
Yeah, because that's it. And it represents, too, where I grew up in Central Florida, where when I became a registered voter, I'm a Lawton Childs Democrat. I worked in his office. I was mentored by him. He wrote my letters for college.
Wow.
Yeah.
And do you feel that Hillary is really receiving... a support base that is more Bill influenced because of his legacy?
I think for certain groups, and then for definitely among women, it's Bill is kind of on the side for women when you look at women in general. But when you look at demographics, the African American demographic, which you know, a lot in the national news, there's a lot of heavy favor and a heavy view of that in the South, and pretty much that's why she's going to take the South. Bill Clinton had that tone that reached our community. He knew how he knew when to be firm and when not to be firm. And I think, you know, you can't please everybody all the time, but I think in terms of helping both the Black and Latino communities have more people enter the middle class, it was the centrist ideals. Now, what happened and what people tend to forget is people forget what happened after 2000. I don't know why people have these memory lapses. They forgot that in 2000, the U.S. budget, for the first time, Bill Clinton was the first administration since the 60s to balance the budget.
That's correct.
And also, when he left office, we had a surplus.
That's correct.
You know, and that same kind of, I think, give and take, and that when I say give and take, I don't mean for the snarky folks that somebody's taking your money. You know, those that make $50,000, we're not trying to take your money. Actually, it's not your money that we're trying to get. We're trying to get people who are getting over by parking their money overseas, and also these companies that claim to be U.S. companies, but they change subsidiaries to offshore companies outside the U.S., but they want the protections. Like, you know, those are the things that a centrist type candidate will have. Republicans used to do it. George Bush was touted as that, but he wasn't.
No.
Well, he was the front man. Cheney was the real man. I mean, that's just it. But and I think in terms of the Democratic Party, I think a centrist is it's the best of both worlds. And it works definitely for California Republicans. So my Republican friends just said, we're voting for Hillary. And then they also have informed in some circles, don't call me for any committees or raising money, because I'm not raising money for anybody. Because, you know, our primary's in June. Pretty much, you know, if Trump is at 500 and some votes now, he's pretty much going to be a lockdown by the time he gets here. So I hear in my Republican friend circles that they're either they'll vote for Hillary or they won't vote.
Wow.
Yeah. And you know, California, the California Republican Party filed bankruptcy. You know, they're coming out of a bankruptcy problem that they happened. I think now they're 2 years past it. So, you know, there's just a whole lot of things that are going on. But I also think, too, that they're trying to cycle in some more young people because they got to get rid of. They got a whole lot of people they got to get rid of.
Absolutely.
So that they can be on the come up. Because sometimes I tease my friends. I'm like, what's up with you boys? You know, for the fiscal conservatives, why y'all have to claim bankruptcy, man? We're supposed to be doing that.
That institution is just decaying, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
I think in this day and age, people are now really feeling the reality of all these policies from these past administrations where it's hitting home and, you know.
And people have selective memory. But, and you know, and that kind of comes down to, and we'll talk a little bit about the Democratic race. Pretty much, Hillary's coasting. She's got almost 1,500 electoral votes and she needs 2,383. So,
wow.
She got all of the delegates in Florida, which were 214.
Let me ask you this. This is sort of something that I find very interesting. When it comes to Bernie Sanders, I like his message. But for some reason, I don't really see him having the gusto, if he was elected president, to get that agenda on board. And is it just me? Is it because of my age demographic?
No,
because it seems that the youth have really embraced him. Mm-hmm. It seems that the youth has really, you know, the youth is the fire that keeps us all alive. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it seems unrealistic.
It is.
Is it just me being negative?
No, you aren't being negative. You're being realistic. And that kind of opens a segue into some things that happened over the weekend. You know, right now, Bernie is leading Missouri. That's the only one, but so far Clinton's sweeping.
Really?
Yeah, she's killing the game.
Wow.
In Missouri. But in Missouri, they're only 15% of the precincts reporting, so that ain't too much. But yeah, she's won North Carolina, which that was pretty strong African-American turnout there. And Illinois, she's leading 30%, wow. Which that's her home state. She's a good girl from Illinois. And, you know, she took Florida and then she won Ohio. So, he's hanging in. And the thing about Sanders is what happened this week, just getting back to your observations, you are realistic. And when I say realistic, what people forget is that the executive branch can only do so much.
Exactly.
It's Congress. I love how young people are very enthusiastic, but some of them have forgotten, if they have taken civics, they forgot how the three branches operate. You just can't say, like free college tuition, which a lot of colleges did that here in California. The UC system had for some of the baby boomers, they got free tuition, which I was like, wow, if we did it before, how come we don't do it again? You know, to say free tuition at public colleges and universities, that resonates with young people. It resonates with me having nieces and nephews coming up. And, you know, I'm from a college family where from the time you're born, it is an expectation that you're going. But realistically, to say that to young people and not be able to talk about where that money's coming from, and then also to not be versed in how different state university systems operate, that kind of, with me, when I heard that, I thought, no, there's just no way.
It's an empty message.
Well, it's not only empty.
The words don't hold weight.
It doesn't hold weight, I think, for those of us who know better. And when I say know better, it has nothing to do with age. It has to do with how we know how economics work. And so to say that to an 18 or a 19-year-old who is so afraid to death about graduating college with high debt, and some of the I think the middle of the road millennials that are between 25 and 30, and then those over 30, they do have they know what it was like in 2007 to graduate and have high debt and not be able to get a job because our economy was crashing then.
Yeah,
you know, whereas Gen Xers, we feel your pain. And can we just say we got done in twice by two different Bushes? You only got your one. We got two. You know, when we graduated college.
I'm already having trauma remembering that.
Yeah. I just need to take you back to the savings and loans, collapse, And then in late 1980s, I graduated college in 1988. And I was one of the lucky ones to be continually employed and even to have the nerve to switch industries, going from television into business.
Very fortunate.
I was very lucky. I was very lucky I didn't have to move home. I was very lucky I didn't have to work at McDonald's. I mean, it was, I think about how lucky it is. But at the same time, I can identify with these young people with the fear that they have. But also keeping it real, as we like to say, that it's impossible for a president to say, okay, free college, it's not going to happen. And you've got governors that need to champion this. And then even if they champion it, they can't get it done unless they're legislatures that control their purse strings. So it's one of those things where people kind of forgot how civics, forgot about that chapter about the different branches and the different levels of government, And I think between that and then, a lot of listeners were kind of asking me what was my take on the whole Bernie Sanders and Hillary race, because they said, I talk more about the Republicans, but in terms of the Democrats, and my audience knows that I used to run communications in Florida as a young Democrat and also, running a lot of different campaigns in Florida as well as here in California. And my whole thing with Bernie is he wasn't the real Democrat. From day one, I called him, he was renting the party. And then over the weekend, he got hit with the question, why are you running as the Democratic Party? And he said, because I want the money.
Wow.
So, and the whole time, and a lot of my analysis that I always felt like it was just off. And one thing that I think, there are two things that the Democratic Party needs to do as a result of Bernie Sanders running is it has nothing to do with switching the party platform, because the party platform, it is what it is. And what a lot of these young people may have been told, a lot of that doesn't fit that. It never was. And that's one thing that I'm concerned that Bernie may have, in essence, tried to redefine this party, the party that he's borrowing to run. And a lot of these young people that I know in some states, and I'm still getting demographics on a lot of his demographics, a lot of them are not registered as Democrats. So in Florida, with it being a closed primary, even if kids who weren't registered as Democrats, they wouldn't have been able to vote for him anyway. So, I'm looking at those, the closed states.
It's very interesting.
Yeah, because that's something. Because one of the things that in a lot of research data has come through with younger, with the millennials, particularly the 18 to 25-year-olds, a lot of them are either going decline to state or independent. And if they and a lot of them, if they're not versed on the levels of civics, they may be into they may have experienced a little stinging effect if they lived in a closed primary state and went to go vote, and some may misconstrue that as being held back.
Would you also agree, though, in regards to Bernie Sanders' campaign, as far as, like, say, for instance, we think of our country and what we're dealing with, this whole downward spiral that we're having here, but also globally, the chaos that's going on. He never resonated to me that he would be a very strong leader that would have strong, you know, international policies.
No, it's not his, it's
would
not
you,
his thing.
Is it just me or would you
no,
concur with that?
No, it is not just you. And we saw that on display last Thursday night in Miami.
Absolutely.
When he, I, you know.
Did you gasp too?
Oh, I howled because I just said, he did not just mention Raul and Fidel Castro and Daniel Ortega in this debate that's being carried on Univision. I was like, this is like, dude. And I just thought, wow. But and I actually had to rewind. I had to do the live rewind because sometimes I think what I was taking notes, and then I just had to go, hold up. I need to like stare at this.
Did you also notice that Hillary Clinton's body language was also kind of in shock when he went there?
Yes. And again, as someone from that community, as someone who worked communications, my audience knows I take my journalist hat off. I was angry because we worked so hard in Miami to explain the Democratic Party, because what, and for some of our young listeners, the point I'm making here is with the, particularly with the Cuban community, the word Democrat, that was used by the Castros when they took over. So, you know, you have a lot of elderly Cuban Americans who they identify that. And you have a lot of immigrants that identify socialist as a bad thing. And I don't care how you do, you know, these creative means where we're like, public library, that's socialism. Public school, that's socialism. When you have people who are still living with the effects of how they were treated by dictators, you don't say that kind of stuff.
It's incredible.
And I could, and then he, but what was even worse was he not only mentioned it, he went on to talk about how Cuba sends doctors places. I'm like, dude, they don't have a proper hospital. That's why they're sending people places, you know? And
the disconnect of reality.
I howled.
And as you mentioned before, you know, it's going on 40, 50 years, and still it's so, that socialism word when it comes to the Cuban community is so powerful.
It is, because you have wealthy families. I don't think people, if you're not from Miami, you wouldn't know it. But even, I mean, I moved there after college. I lived there for 8 years of my life, and I feel it. I mean, if I got defensive,
you cringe too.
I was angry, and I was just, and then my common sense kicked in to go, oh no, he didn't. And then I just thought his handlers either are as unpolished as he is, because I can't believe it. But then when he kept on and when he talked about Ortega, and I'm like, no, he's not bringing up the Sandinistas in this too.
Yeah.
And then when he talked about, oh, they did health care. And I'm like, these dudes executed people, you know? It's like, Bernie, pull up. And that's just when I just said, oh, man. And I just thought, you know what? The Democrats need to... you know, you can't really do anything to him because he's not a real Democrat.
No, he's not. And there's been a misinterpretation that he is a Democrat.
He's just borrowing. He's a Democrat for now. But I assure, after he's done losing, because he is going to lose, he'll go back to being I. And you know, the guy is a nice guy, but he's not ready for prime time.
No.
He is definitely not ready for prime time.
I've mentioned this before in my private conversations. If there was a younger Democrat with that message who had more credibility, mm-hmm. and had really more of a track record, mm-hmm. where he's built his career with what he is preaching, then I would have more faith. But I just don't. As I mentioned, I love his message, but it seems unrealistic to me.
It is. And a lot of that just speaks to his disconnect even with constituency.
You might find this offensive, Janet, but I've actually, if it comes down to a Hillary Clinton and Trump, I don't know how I rationalize this because regardless, I've been hearing that people are saying, well, we're just not going to vote. I think that's a travesty. I think that's a travesty. I think mm-hmm. that's a sin. But I still cannot feel comfortable voting for Hillary. And I can't believe that I'm being forced to vote for Trump.
Well, no, there's the Green Party. And then there's real Libertarian Party. And actually, that's a great segue.
How are they doing?
The Libertarians, they have their convention, their national convention in Orlando in May. And one of the things that I've actually gotten their press releases in the last 24 hours, they're on high alert.
Giving me hope here.
Yeah, they're on high alert that they feel like they're going to be hijacked by Republicans.
Interesting.
And, you know, and I have respect for the Libertarians because they are consistent across the board. You don't pay for anything. Like what the Republicans talk about that you shouldn't have to pay in taxes, these guys are the real deal ballers. I mean, they don't believe you should be paying for roads, taxes for roads or anything. But you know,
really, extreme?
But you know, but that's what a real libertarian is. You know, Rand Paul, he's just playing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they've actually done the rally call to register libertarians to make sure to make plans to come to the convention. And you know, getting back to just some of the establishment politics. The second point I wanted to make about what the Democrats need to do to change. One thing that I don't care about is, and I particularly don't care to see an elected member of Congress serve as the chair of the DNC.
I agree.
This is the first time that's happened. I know Tulsi Gabbard from Hawaii, she was a vice chair, or she was in another, I think she was right behind Deborah Wasserman Schultz. This is the first time, and I know that a lot of times these party chair roles are based on fundraising. It's complete fundraising. Mm-hmm. And the two guys in my lifetime that have done the best job in Democratic fundraising have been Ron Brown, former Secretary Ron Brown, God rest his soul, may he rest in peace. And then Terry McAuliffe, who is the current governor of Virginia. They knew how to energize young voters. I mean, they came up with the concept of the $25 at that level, because the $25 donation, and that was to engage young people.
Absolutely.
And that
it was very successful too, by the way.
It was, but the thing was, they didn't hold elective office while they were doing it, and I think that's part of the problem. And I think a lot of the drama that has happened between Bernie and some of the light infighting, which kind of again upsets me because he's renting. He's just renting. We're talking about real homeowners.
I love that analogy. He's renting.
Well,
it's true.
It's just like people who live in a nice neighborhood of manicured homes. They are the people who actually own, who made the commitment, who are all in. And then there are people who rent. And, he's going to be gone. And, and the fact that he's trying to redefine our party, I think that's a whole lot of nerve. It's a whole lot of nerve to
It's very
say,
ambitious, too.
Well, I think it's rather rude to say, to try to talk about someone in campaigning saying, they take money from this person, they take money for this person. And it's like, but that's how the game is played and that's how this party does. But then you just admit over the weekend, this is why you're here.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's kind of like, dude, you need to sit down, take several seats and move to the left because it's just not right.
Let me ask you this, because it seems that you have the pulse, you have your fingers on the pulse with the climate. Do you feel it's projected that Hillary will win the nomination? Do you feel that this will disenfranchise and upset the youth? Because it seems that the youth are so involved and so fired up with Bernie. Do you think this will make them kind of disconnect?
Well, it's kind of hard to predict that, but what I think will happen is that, for the most part, I think young people will come around, particularly if Trump is the Republican nominee. And there'll probably be those individuals who are outliers that probably they weren't going to vote anyway, and probably they aren't voting anyway now. They're just all about the Bernie message. And chances are, if they're independent and living in a closed primary, they may not anyway, which means they weren't a part of this process to begin with. I think young people are much smarter than that, that I don't think that they would be petty. And I come at this from a perspective of somebody who has worked with young voters. You don't get what you want all the time. And I think a lot, especially this weekend, a lot of young people have started to wake up, because a lot of people, when they heard Bernie's comments, which that's not something to hear it from him, but they've been hearing it from other people like me. If they've been listening, a lot of listeners have been listening to this show. I've been saying he's been renting from the beginning. He's not the real Democrat.
Calling him out.
Yeah, from just day one. Nice guy, but no. But, one of the, and just for our listeners, polls, votes are still being counted for the Democrats. And while we're still on air, I can give you some updates.
Please do.
North Carolina, Trump won, which we figured that, ha ha. Trump is leading in Missouri, so they're still counting. They have 23% of the precincts in. Trump has won Illinois. So with the exception of Ohio, Kasich, he holds on to the 66 delegates, which is an all or none state. And then, and North Carolina, Trump won it. Cruz, he's coming in that quiet second everywhere else. But, one thing I wanted to mention was the two questions I wanted to ask Cruz. You know what it is? No reporter has asked them. One, I want to ask him, what did he register for Selective Service here in the U.S.? No one's ever asked him that. And second, what did he mark on his college applications?
Oh, very interesting.
For someone,
those are some excellent questions. Yeah. I can't believe that. You are absolutely right. No one has inquired on that.
No. If there was a third, I would ask, when did his mother file the form? Since he was born in Canada, when did his mother file the form? Because there's a form that you file if you are a U.S. citizen born abroad. When was it filed?
Interesting.
Yeah, but definitely the Selective Service, that's a big deal, because the fact that he recently renounced his Canadian citizenship, I have a problem with that.
Absolutely.
I have a problem with it. Even if he wiggles through and says, oh, well, yes, I am a citizen and I can run. But, how dare you try to be commander-in-chief?
It just shows the character and the integrity, or lack of integrity, I should say.
But no one's asked that question. And chances are, now that I've put it out there, I might be banned. I'm surprised Trump didn't ask. But those are two questions, and definitely for his college applications, seeing how he's not the affirmative action type of guy. So did he mark Canadian, or did he mark Hispanic? Because he's playing the Hispanic. He's not trying to be Latino.
No. Interesting.
That's something that I would want to ask him. Now, Jimmy, before we get out, what I want you to share with my listeners, tell us a little bit about your show.
My show?
Yeah.
Really? Well, my show is not as professional and eloquent and elegant as your show.
Oh, no.
My show pretty much just reflects on the subculture of disenfranchised, disconnected people of all age demographics who just really don't really want to be with the norm. They regurgitate what is pretty much been forced down their throats, and they live a rebellious lifestyle with aggressive art, aggressive music, aggressive politics. Uh-huh. One of the things that I really want to stress, though, is you can be in an underground subculture type of environment, but still, at the end of the day, we all have to be out with the sun. We all breathe the air. We all have to eat. And I think it's important that everybody unify regardless of what political party they're from,
right,
what they believe, what religious beliefs, what they feel. Every household has been affected by politics. These last presidents that we've had, as you mentioned, from Clinton on to the Bushes, they've all been affected, whether it's economically or with the war,
right,
with, you know, healthcare. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important now, especially since we have such irresponsible candidates that are, I find it a travesty. I deal with musicians that travel the world.
Right.
And the whole world is laughing at the United States and horrified. And again, I've been using this analogy on my show where when I refer to Trump, I refer to him as the character in the Dead Zone, Greg Stilson. Very, very extreme, mm-hmm, very self-centered, very aggressive. But it's an interesting for me to see that the American public is so fed up with what they've been dealing with these last decades, mm-hmm, that they look at him as the saving grace.
Yeah, and that's
frightening.
It is very frightening. And for a lot of, I think, traditional Republicans, especially here in California, they're more about they're more about the financial side in terms of fiscal management. And of course, you know, they're the 1%, so they want their financial break. But pretty much they're a live and let live kind of thing, and they don't have a problem with immigrants, they don't have a problem with anybody else. But it seems like Trump is the anti anything, but and also he'll say and do anything. Yeah, it's almost like he'll turn a trick for a vote. I mean, it has gotten to that, and he will exploit whatever he needs to do. Like the image of him holding, I guess, quote unquote, the Bible that his mother gave him. It looked awkward. And then with the African-American community, the list of quote unquote pastors, which is so 1950s in terms of, black people don't vote like that just because your pastor says that. And the pastors that he had, a lot of them aren't, how do I say it? They aren't the most scrupulous. I mean, they aren't the most.
Keep it real.
You know, they're into that. They're into money. They're into the whole money scene. They are the ones that are, you know, you think about. They call it the, I think, liberation gospel. It's kind of hard for me to relate to that, seeing how I'm Catholic. But they call it prosperity gospel. That's it. You know, loose your money, or if you pray on it, God will give you this money. But, you know, I need you to bless me to help me get this jet, you know, kind of money. You know, that's the kind of thing that goes on with them. And, you know, but to try to pander like that to the African-American community is ridiculous. And the fact that
it's very insulting.
It is extremely insulting because it's making fun of the civil rights movement, where the church was all the black community had in terms of standing up for rights. And that's where that was the only safe place until Atlanta, the Atlanta bombing. That was the only safe place that people could convene and have the kinds of discussions to try to see if they could stand up for themselves to be treated as if they were human beings. That's,
absolutely.
And, you know, that's my parents' generation. And, you know, even my parents, you don't even campaign to them like that because they were there in the 60s, you know. And then you have people like me, the Gen Xer coming after, who was born after, you know, I mean, that whole movement is a history book lesson to me. Well, you don't come at me like that either. And especially seeing how I'm Catholic, which people don't realize that the African-American community is extremely diverse. We do have a middle class. We have an upper middle class. And there's a stark difference between, I think, what expectations of a presidential candidate is at that level versus the hood. Yeah, I'll support the hood. I've never lived in the hood, but I get it. but also at the same time, it's something that you can't pander to a group to think that they vote as a bloc. So, you know,
well, it just shows the ignorance in that form of planning and preparation to address a demographic that way.
Exactly. Well, Jimmy, you know, we're all out of time, but
really?
we have to have you come back. And everybody, I promise I'll answer more of your questions. I got through some of them because you wanted to know about what I was thinking about certain candidates. Definitely get social with me on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram throughout the week. And we will see you same time, same place. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you very much, Janet, for having me.